Hi and welcome to another episode of Millennialism. My name is Adam Gavin, and every week I sit down and chat and interview a guest about a topic that interests me. I've had entrepreneurs, award-winning authors, esteemed academics, pioneering filmmakers, TED speakers, philosophers, and friends come on the show to discuss everything from social media to health, business to culture, self-development to global travel. I'm collecting an ever-growing list of fascinating subjects to explore. Millennialism is the podcast for anyone who wants to learn more about anything and everything. Great conversations sprinkled with some actionable insight on how to get the most out of your life. Today I'm joined by Robin Agaston, an intrepid world traveler, multi-careerist businesswoman, and all-around amazing human being. She spent the past 2 decades working and adventuring all over the world, collecting an encyclopedia worth of fascinating stories along the way. During our chat, we tackle many big topics, such as positives and negatives that come with living a nomadic lifestyle, finding a balance between career and stability versus adventuring and traveling, and the sacrifices that come with never truly settling down. I post a new episode every Friday, so make sure to subscribe to never miss an episode. As always, if you have any questions or just want to get in touch with me, you can do so on my website, adamgavin.com, or Instagram at adamgavin. But for now, enjoy this conversation with Robin Agaston. All right. Welcome to the show, Robin. It's very good to have you here.
Great to be here.
I've heard so much about you for the last couple of weeks. We have one friend in common, or two friends in common, and they've been going on and on about how what a great person you are, and that you've lived like a somewhat unconventional life in in most people's eyes. And I hear a lot of people, like in my generation, younger people talking about making different choices than maybe their parents and maybe not living by the norm, which is like college, work, marriage, kids, work more, retire. So I thought it'd be a perfect opportunity to talk to you who is a person who's taking like a different route in life. Can you just start by telling me a little bit about yourself, like where you grew up and what led you to where you are right now?
I wish I had a definitive answer of that, but I was born and raised in Canada in a suburb outside of Toronto. I did my university education in Canada as well, in Ontario. But I think the turn started at 18 when I decided that I was going to go backpack in Europe by myself, having never left North America before, never crossing an ocean. Both parents had never crossed an ocean either. And somehow I got this idea to kind of go it alone and go travel. And then I really caught the bug. So I went to university. During that time, I had lived and worked in India for 6 months and was part of my undergrad. And then I actually handed in my master's thesis from Namibia because I got an internship to go there for the World Bank, ILO, and UNDP internship for a year. And then I was in Ghana for 2 years after the career in kind of international development, thinking that's what I wanted to do. I really realized that I hadn't achieved, I achieved everything on my 5-year list, but wasn't satisfied and didn't feel like it was something that I wanted to carry on to. So I came back to Canada for 8 months. And in that time, talked to about 100 different people about their jobs, decided I want to go into business. And then I moved into London. I was there for 8.5, almost 9 years. I met my now partner. We've been together for 7 years. And in that time, I've taken 2 sabbaticals, one of which I just finished in September. And now I'm living and working in Switzerland.
That's incredible. It sounds like you've been all over the place. How old are you now? I'm not sure if that's okay to ask, but
no, it's fine. So I'm 38. I think the other thing that it's quite interesting when you look at, like, I have 3 passports now. Mm-hmm. I've lived in, this is my 6th country I consider myself living in, but I've worked in probably another 10 or so for months of time as opposed to years. So it's funny because that question of like, where is home? And it's a bit complicated for me.
yeah, I understand. But what do you think, where do you think you would have been in life today if you hadn't taken that trip all those years ago when you were 18?
It's hard to say. Like, I think leading this kind of life, you have a lot of sliding door moments in a sense like, oh, what if I just stayed in that country? Or what if I kept dating that person? Or what if I kept, stayed at home? And I had those opportunities all along the way and almost everywhere I've been. And I just think that I've been getting better and better listening to my instincts and not compromising on what I want and what's going to make me happy. And I think in my 20s, it was an unconscious thing. Like I, you know, kind of know that it's the right thing, kind of move on. Whereas now in kind of my 30s, I take a lot more time and actually think like, what is this? Actually weigh the options in a bit more of a systematic way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just, it's, I can't imagine, I've been doing this for so long. I can't imagine what life would be like had I just stayed in Brantford, Ontario. And you know, got married, had a couple kids. I don't like, I would be a completely different person. And I still have friends that live, have taken that trajectory and are quite mm-hmm. happy with that. I've been so happy with my choices. I can't see how I could have been happy in that way.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you kind of, this lifestyle came to you pretty like organically just through the choices you made like earlier in your 20s or from when you were 18 even maybe. So maybe it wasn't like such a conscious decision and that you thought about that much, you know, like, oh, what's it going to be like if I go down this trajectory or whatever. But what do you think are some like misconceptions about that sort of lifestyle that people have?
I think that number one, especially nowadays with like Instagram and social and the like I think I lead a pretty charmed life from the outside. Like I get to go and travel and do wonderful places, go visit wonderful places, do wonderful things. And I'm that kind of person that tries to take advantage of the stuff that's around. So it's not just, you know, I'm in Switzerland, I'm in Basel, which is kind of north and it's a bit boring. So like every weekend, I'm usually on a train to the mountains to go skiing, or in the summer I'll be hiking and taking new courses and doing different things. And my partner lives in a different country than I do, and I have friends in many different countries. So what you see on my feed is me constantly in different places. And I've had friends say, like, they'll be like nearby and I'm like, oh, I'm here, I can come meet you. And they don't like, oh, I didn't, they didn't think why, I'm losing my words. But so I have a friend that will show up nearby and I'll be like, hey, let's meet up. And they're like, I didn't realize you were here. I was like, what do you mean? They're like, you're so hard to keep track of. and you do lead a really wonderful life, but the downside is that nobody thinks that there's anything negative. There's a lot of time in this life. There's a lot of solitude. Coming to a new place, there's a lot of meeting people, getting yourself out there. When you'd rather be at home watching Netflix on a Friday, like you get an invitation, you have to say yes because you have to build up a social network. I think the other side is I'm getting into more and more is if you've lived as many countries as I am, where's your pension? Where's your healthcare? Where's your, like, you're trying to plan things longer term, which comes natural when you live in one country. But when you don't and you're dealing with like international taxes and different residencies and stuff, like it can get very complicated very quickly. So common thing, like I don't own any property right now because I don't know where I could without causing a big tax issue or making it much more complicated on myself. So some of the things and the choices that you maybe living a quote standard life take for granted aren't available or are way more complicated to somebody like me, because I'm not, you know, I do well at my job, I'm successful, but I'm not a millionaire. And I'm still building my career. So the lifestyle I'm leading, I think people just assume it's only open to like the very, very rich. It's not, but there are some trade-offs as a result.
So how do you sort of like plan ahead and maybe save for retirement or just investments, like while you're in so many different countries? I mean, you're in Switzerland now, but if you're going to be in, I don't know, somewhere in Dubai, like in 3 years, how do you plan ahead?
You just kind of do your best. I mean, I'm in the midst of it. It's 'cause the UK, I was pretty good about, I mean, I moved there when I was 27. So that's when I actually kind of started. I kind of think my 20s were a bit of a financial write-off in that sense. No debt, no real savings to speak of. Yeah. So I really started there, and some of it's still sitting in the UK, but some of it's not. I'm not allowed to. So I'm in the process of trying to figure out, do I move it? Do I not? Can I keep it there? The money that I'm earning in Switzerland, do I invest it? You know, where do I invest it? In the stock market? There's a lot of like financial predators out there, but I'm a chartered management accountant. So like I know how to read and this kind of stuff and get involved, but it's just, it's difficult when you don't know where you're going to be. Like, it would be easy if I could say, oh, I'm going to retire in Canada, or I'm going to retire in the UK, or Andorra, or Switzerland, or Spain, or literally any of those countries that are available for me to retire to. But you just do your best and save as much as you can and put it in a bunch of different baskets and hope that it holds. It's definitely one that I'm constantly, and right now for the first time I've like had to face adulting in that sense of like, oh, I have to actually document all this stuff and figure out where all my money is and where I'm liable. And also things like, I come from, so I've got a Canadian and a British passport. My third one's Hungarian. But Canada and the UK have pensions and healthcare. So, you know, if you're older, it may be worth thinking about moving there, but then you have to live there for a certain number of years to be able to access the system. This is all pretty boring stuff, but it's actually like super important.
Yeah, it is.
A nomad, you know, if you're actually going to be a bit of a nomad in the longer term, it's easy to do in your 20s when you don't have like a whole lot of finances, so to speak, of, or don't own a property. But, you know, when you're, and if you're American, you get taxed anywhere you are in the world. Like, it just becomes that much more complicated. I just wish somebody had told me younger to start looking into this before I started, rather than 15 years ago trying to retro.
Yeah. I guess I'll just have to have you back on the podcast in like 30 years so we can see how it went. But
here's what you need.
But I've heard like people who kind of do that. Like, I have some family members who live in different countries as well, and I think like a lot of those people just they've kind of realized that, you know, it's gonna be hard for them to like receive a pension from any country because they're so like mobile, like they're everywhere. So they just save all their money in like index funds and hope that it pays off in the long run. Yeah.
Like, the market's toppy, so you kind of have to like take gambles in different ways and like try to figure out the best way to do it. But you know, it's not that hard. The information's out there. It's just timing. When you work 50, 60 hours a week and travel and do all these other things to then have to worry about that is a whistle. Just takes time.
So what things about this sort of lifestyle do you think you are most like grateful for? Or I don't know, it might be a tough question, but yeah, if you have anything.
I mean there's so many things about this life that I'm grateful for. I think just have the ability to see the world and have the experiences that I have had. I mean, I think I've lived, I had to say, like 40s fast approaching, and I think I will have lived more life in my 40 years than most people get to do in an entire lifetime. And I'm super, super grateful for that. I'm grateful that the world has moved in a way that has allowed me to do this. Like, I think, you know, most recently when I met your friend, I was traveling alone by myself in Latin America. I wouldn't have done that 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. I think the world kind of moved on in a way that I've been able to feel safe doing so. And travel's cheaper, easier to get around. We're much more connected. I think there's a lot of safety in that. So it's just the world's moved in a way to facilitate this kind of living. I think that also just being able to meet incredible people, like that's connecting with like-minded people from all around the world is my favorite thing. And the number of times I've had one degree of separation from people is scary. I do genuinely feel like, you know, you have all the stuff in the news that's a lot of like divisiveness and hate and anger and just everything that comes through, like especially the UK and the US at the moment, it's just negative. But you go out into the world and you connect with people and it's like, that's not my reality. That's not what most people's reality actually are. And living this life, you see that every single day. You depend on the kindness of people to include you into their lives in a way that I don't think you necessarily do if you stay in the same place again and again. I think the other thing that I say two other things. I'm comfortable in my own company, which, you know, there's a difference between loneliness and solitude. And I'm very good at being in solitude. Not saying that you don't get loneliness now and again, but that kind of the ability to kind of travel alone and be alone while still feeling connected, I think helps enable this kind of life. Because people that need others all the time, maybe that might be quite scary for them to be out there and, you know, not meet. I'm also an extrovert, so that's super helpful. And I think I always, whenever I get asked at these corporate things, like, well, what's, you know, what's your superpower? I'm like, I can be at home anywhere. So I can feel, drop into places. We'll go see friends that had never necessarily, you know, maybe be work colleagues, but I'll just go to their house for a weekend. And they're like, it's like, we've known, like, I'll meet people. And they, I get, like, people say, it's like, I've known you forever, a lot. And it's because there's no sense in hiding who I am. So I'm like completely my authentic self when I show up wherever I am, because I don't have the time to waste. And, you know, I've got to connect with people quickly. And I think that's a gift. I don't ever worry about what will people think, or pretending to be somebody I'm not, because there's no sense in it.
Yeah, that is a true superpower. And to go back to what you were first saying, like about traveling by yourself and stuff like that, I mean, I'm not as well traveled as you, but I've still, like, for only being my age, I've still, like, traveled around quite a bit. And I also found that a lot of the places I've been to, you know, I've been warned by friends or, you know, stuff you find on the internet. And then you get there and you're just like, what was the fuss about? Like, this is, everything's fine. Yeah, so it's just goes to show us that you really need to explore. Not that you shouldn't be always be cautious and, like, do your research, but a lot of the times, you know, people that write stuff on the internet have never been there themselves, so it's hard for them to say. And the second part, like, I can definitely relate to that, like, you know, just being on your own. Like, I just moved to a new city a couple of weeks ago, and, like, I don't really know anyone. And I can imagine it's been very similar for you when you've, like, moved between these different places. And I'm not sure if you, like, actually work remotely, so you just, like, go to a coffee shop or whatever when you're in Switzerland now, or if you have an office to go to. But, like, how do you usually, like, integrate into the community wherever you are?
I think it's been very dependent on the size and the scope of the place. So living in India and is in Bangalore, and then Namibia and Windhoek, like, there's a good number of expats, and all you had to do was meet one and they'd bring you into the circle. So I found that very easy. London was a totally different kettle of fish, and because it's so big and there's so many Canadians, Americans, Aussies, Kiwis, especially on the youth work visa. So there's a huge number of people, and it's a really different thing to move to a country where you speak the language, but you're a foreigner. And the Brits are tough. They're really tough. So I spent a lot of time, trying to meet people through work. I knew some British friends that I met in other overseas that were also in London, meetup groups, when Facebook was still functional or cool, people through then. So one of my best friends I met on a Canadian ladies in London night that I went to. I started doing triathlon in London as well, again, to meet more people. And you just kind of collect as you go. The downside to that is, especially in a city like London, and I'm assuming New York's very similar, and Paris as well, is that it's not a lifetime city for most people. So I was there for, you know, almost a decade, and I had to say goodbye to a lot of people. I still go back like once a month, and I still have a good number of friends, but my friends are all disparate. They are from different, they're the remainers of the different groups that I made over the years. In Switzerland, I am working I've always worked in an office. I'm quite corporate in what I do. But because the city of Basel is only 170,000 people, but, you know, there's like a third of them are expats. So my team right now is 12 people, and there's 15 nationalities on it. So I'm in quite an international environment, and very few are actually from this place. So that makes it a lot easier. It does make it a bit weird in the sense that you end up hanging out socially with the people that you work with. But you just kind of go with it in a way that you maybe wouldn't necessarily kind of a standard work environment. But it's just about saying yes, like getting involved, going, meeting people. And, you know, you kind of, when you start, you're not going to make friends with everybody. And you kind of have the same kind of expatty conversations. Where are you from? What are you doing here? You bitch about your place that you first moved to, the things that you're noticing are confusing. But I've always ended up finding my feet after a while. And you just got to get yourself out there to be able to meet more people. which can be tiring, but it's also good. You have to really like talking and then chatting to people and also listening, or else I think for introverts it's a lot harder. But I don't have that problem.
Do you feel like you've gotten better at connecting with people, like throughout your moves?
Yes, I think I've gotten better with connecting, but I also think I've got better than assessing. And this is gonna sound pretty harsh, but I now kind of, you get a feeling quite quickly whether you're going to connect with somebody. So rather than, and understanding like, what's the nature? Is it a time of your life? Is it a place? Is it what bonds you together? Is it a common interest? And so you can have different friends. Not everybody has to be your best friend, but I've been quite good about stop putting effort in where I necessarily know that I'm not going to get any effort back, because it has to be useful. And there's like, it's a finite, you have a finite capacity in terms of time and energy to do this. So you need to be able to put it in wisely and know what works and what doesn't.
Definitely. Yeah. But it sounds like you have a lot of experience with it now. So I'm kind of more, I think I wouldn't say I'm introverted, but I'm definitely not as outgoing as you seem to be, but I think it's all about just like putting yourself out there and not, as you said, like after a while, I guess you become better at like assessing what relationships are worth nurturing and keeping.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So what would you say, like, I mean, you've lived all over the world. What would you say is your like favorite place, or what's your favorite adventure you've been on? Between the work stuff, maybe.
Yeah, I just think it is really hard to be able to like quantify that, because different adventures have different things. So I think like one of my favorites have been like the big hikes I've been on. So doing the Taurus Alpine for 10 days. I've done the West Coast Trail in Vancouver Island in Canada. I've done some hut-to-hut hiking all around Europe. And that is like my favorite kind of adventure, because you're self-sufficient. You're bringing all of like your food and what you need on your back. And oftentimes technology is completely stripped away. And it just connects you to people in a way that it connects you to the outdoors, like just being outside and in a way that you're not normally used to, but then connecting to people. And it just strips back, to be honest, all the bullshit of life and puts you into an environment that's magical. And because everyone's there wanting to do the same thing, it connects people in a way that I haven't really experienced elsewhere, I think. But yeah. I mean, if that's like, I think the ones that I've most enjoyed, if you say greatest adventure, like spending 3 weeks in a hospital in India, or motorcycling from Alaska down to Costa Rica, or, you know, cycling across Colombia from Bogota to Cartagena, like, was the hardest physical challenge I've done. Like, it's different. Greatest is a hard word to be quantum. Yeah. Because each adventure has a different purpose and a different outcome, and it's hard to pick one or the other. There's always a group. There's a group. Sorry, that's a bit bullshitty of an answer, but
No. It's I know it's not a very like well-defined question, but I sometimes I think there is like one that stands out above the rest, maybe the one who like changed you the most, or you came back with like a different perspective, or that you made a special friend or met someone.
The thing, like, there's something about all of them, mostly good, some bad, that has taught you something about life or the world, and you still have, like, I have connection with still, that just it's made me who I am. Pieces at different times, whether it's a place, an experience, a people, and they kind of stay with you, and you carry them on through your life to the next adventure.
Yeah. How long did it take to motorbike from, did you say all the way from Canada, Alaska, down to South America?
Down to Costa Rica. We parked up the bike for a year. That was 6 months.
6 months. Wow. Yeah, that's incredible. I read a book.
I enjoyed the driving. My partner Max is the driver. It's just chatty luggage on the back.
So you were just riding along, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's just I was learning my motorcycle license, so it was a plan to do this. And okay. he's a semi-professional adventurer. So he's ridden a motorcycle from London to Beijing and Cairo to Cape Town. And he wanted to do this one and wanted to do it with me and didn't want to do it with like support. So we did it on our own. And I was learning how to drive and was considering getting my own bike, but it was just too daunting and stressing me out. And so we decided to go on the same bike, which was completely the right decision. I think I enjoyed it so much more than being stressing out, and also the physicality of like actually riding a bike, because he's been doing it for 20-25 years now.
Yeah,
he can ride without having to get tired by the concentration, versus every time I got onto a bike was just exhausted by half an hour because there's so many things happening. It's not a natural process yet. Yeah. So yeah, it was a good choice to be able to be on the back with him. And that, I think that adventure was the one that really, really taught. I mean, I had 40 liters of space. He had 35. And then we had about 50 liters of like camping kit and food with us. Yeah. Completely self-sufficient. It really teaches you how actually little you need to get by and have a really great time.
So how did you like spend your days on that trip? I mean, did you work anything on the road, or did you just take that time off and just enjoy each other's company?
I took their time off. We both took, I did write a blog just out of pure self-interest because I wanted to document the trip, but also getting some more digital skills. But I didn't actually work for any income while I was away, but I saved for, we saved for a long time. And I just stopped spending money. I know that sounds ridiculous, but like I looked at my monthly expenses and went, right, no coffees out, bringing my lunch every day, not going out, like going out once or twice a month versus once or twice a week, not buying a new dress, like really stripped back. And I was shocked at how much money I was able to save. And that you know, you burn through it relatively quickly, but it was more than enough to travel on. I also, because this was his adventure, he bought the bike. So that was a big help. Okay. I didn't have to.
Nice.
Yeah.
What's the experience of like spending 6 months, like every 24 hours a day together? I can imagine it's pretty intense and like you can test any relationship. So what was that like?
I mean, yeah, we, in the entire 6 months together, we'd only left each other for, I think it was like 21 hours. I went and saw a friend who was in Vegas for a night. That's it. The rest of the time I was physically attached to him most of the day, waking hours and then sleeping beside him every night. It was great. Like this wasn't the first, we did do 4 months sailing around the Med together. And that was very similar. Like we didn't have any time apart and we're both really good at just being in each other's company. And I also too, they get into a bit of routine. So I would go to yoga classes wherever I could find them or go for runs if we were somewhere, especially like in local villages and stuff, when it goes dark, you're not going outside. So we blasted through all seasons of Game of Thrones or like would sit and like listen to a podcast individually and just found some alone time in space without actually being alone. But it was a real, because he ended up, we stopped in Costa Rica, we're supposed to go all the way down to Argentina, but he ended up getting quite a bad stomach parasite. And that's how I ended up traveling by myself, because Max is semi-retired and is able to kind of work when he wants. And he's like, I'm going to go back to Europe. I'm like, cool, I've got a year and a half off, so I'm going to keep going. And, and it was great. And I mean, that's the magic, I think that our relationship is so unusual, in that we are completely independent individuals and so supportive of each other, but still have this bond where we can stay in each other's company for 6 months at a time.
Yeah. Like based on all the stories that I've heard about you, it seems like you've done so much throughout your life, like career and in terms of traveling too. Do you feel like there has been a price to pay, or like any sacrifices to make while...
Yeah. Definitely. I think I wouldn't necessarily call them sacrifices. It's just trade-offs, because if they were sacrifices, that kind of denotes negativity. And I think they're just choices in life, and you can't have one without the other. So I think the biggest thing has been kind of a lack of kind of constant community and home. And I think that's something like, where is home to me? And even though I wouldn't change anything, I think that's something, as I'm kind of looking ahead going, Max and I have these conversations like, okay, in 20 years, like, where are we going to put down some roots at, like, in our 50s? But that's quite important to me because I think I do wish that I was somewhere where I had connections, a bit more like longer connections. But the reverse side of that is that when you're in an expat community, people are much more willing and fast to help out. So, you know, I got the flu a few months ago, and then I had coworkers going, let me bring you soup. And like, you wouldn't do that if you were maybe necessarily in the same place, because you'd always assume that they had people. But when you're out of it, people know that you're alone and your friends or your family and your coworkers that have, you know, need to help out. So again, it's the trade. I think upside, I have friends everywhere. Downsides, none of my friends are in the same place. So, you know, there's little pockets of concentration, but a lot of my free time is spent maintaining relationships and putting the time in. I'm very often the person that's reaching out, because if I don't, people forget that I'm there because I'm not physically in their space. Mm-hmm. But I'm really lucky because I've had a whole group of friends that I've had for years and years that understand that and will just allow me to drop in and out of their lives and will call me if I need them, but are always there too when I need somebody at the other end of the phone to Skype with. So that's great. I think also too, and this is a bit of a reality that I think a lot of expats are facing as they're getting older. Parents are aging. I'm very lucky that right now my parents are healthy, but like, I know that like child guilt exemplifies over oceans. So being away from my parents, and I have a brother who's still in like nearby, I don't want him to have to hang all that effort himself. And mm-hmm. I think like there will be a time and a place where I'm likely going to have to go back to Canada for a while for that reason. And I think that's a challenge. I think the other thing, and it's a bit more, some people would see this as a sacrifice. I've seen this as a choice, is that we have chosen not to have kids because Max and I both don't understand how we could reconcile children and our lifestyle. And I think that's a sensitive topic for a lot of people and a whole other podcast that we could get into.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people that's a question I think in recent years where I'm quite open about saying like, oh no, we've chosen not to have kids. It's not because I couldn't have any. It's not because of all like negative things. And I think the majority of people have a really hard time wrapping their head around that. But I'm a big believer, if you can't, you have to make that choice for yourself and you have to know what you're getting into. It's a huge, huge responsibility and commitment. And you know, we looked at all the different options and decided that that wasn't going to work for us. So yeah, sacrifice is some choice for me.
Is this something you've been thinking about like for a long time, or is it just a realization that has like slowly come to you as you've realized that it just kids and stuff won't fit into your lifestyle?
Well, I think I'd lie to say that it was easy in that decision. I think partly, unfortunately, with being a woman, age will force that topic on you more than anything else. Mm-hmm. So we were about 4 or 5 years into our relationship when, you know, it's kind of going right. We kind of have to either go one way or the other. What do we do? And I, to be honest, really struggled it, but was with it initially. And it was a piece of advice I had from my mom when she said, like, I don't understand why you're struggling so much. And I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, every choice you've ever made in your life has taken you further away from marriage and kids and settling down. Why are you fighting for something that you think you want rather than what you actually want? And I was like, oh, okay, yep, that's right. And I think that has been a constant kind of theme throughout this style of life. And I think you have to be ready for it if you're going to choose to be a bit of a semi-nomad, is that you have to get clear on what you actually want, what society tells you to want. And when your friends are going through certain milestones, whether it's marriage or babies or buying a house or XY, opening a business, whatever it may be, you've got to be okay that you're not in that position to be able to do that. And not let it damage or impact your confidence or self-worth. Mm-hmm. When 99% of the population is doing this under a certain trajectory and you're not, you've got to be quite sure of where you are. And I'm not saying that it's easy all of the time, but I put a lot of work into that and revisit that because I think it's important to actually logically work through those choices and why you're doing something. And that's when you kind of back to that question of like, what makes the difference between those who do and don't? Those who do have sat down and thought about it really and constantly are reevaluating to make sure it's right for them.
Mm-hmm. So what has it been like for you to like see all your friends back home, like settle down, get married, have kids, buy houses while you've just been on the road, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, there's a middle ground, and I know a lot of people in that middle ground, right? So one of my best friends lives in Swaziland with her husband and two kids, and she picked up and moved to Swaziland 4 years ago when her baby was 8 weeks old. And it's just, you know, I met them when we were living in Namibia together, and then they lived in the UK, and I have a number of, I have the friends that I have grew up with and I have home that are in Toronto area, and I come from a big family too. I have lots of cousins and things. So I have some constants, but then I, over the years, have had a number of friends that have taken different paths and alternative paths and that sit somewhere along that spectrum. So it's fine. I think the nature too, though, of this age is that, and again, I really would love to write a book called Shit I Wish I Knew Going Into 30, like how different choices have such long-term impacts. And I think part of the challenges that I faced have been just a nature of just being my age. Like, people are either in families or not. I've got friends who want kids who aren't in a relationship and have to make those choices. And I think it's kind of universal no matter where you are. And me just being, if anything, me being in Switzerland right now makes it easier because I'm surrounded by people that have taken their different choice from a day-to-day perspective.
Yeah, and I guess as more and more people take that, and you can actually, as you talked about before, like having someone to look up to who's 10, 15 years older, who's been through it before, I guess it's becoming easier for people younger than you too, to kind of see that, you know, people can live that way and still be happy. Because it's like, looking back, like it's been the unconventional route, but I feel like more and more people are doing it.
And I think there's a lot more like pressures now around, like, so for example, like, this nomadic life is great, but one of the things that I'm absolutely sure of is we need to stop flying as much as we do. You know, like, the environment is not getting any better, and, you know, bringing kids into this world, I know a lot of younger people that are second guessing that, considering what they are. And, you know, you need to be, the only way that I've been able to maintain this life is cheap airfare, which I always carbon offset, but that's not really the answer, is it? So
yeah, yeah.
I think there's a lot more to come in how a semi-nomadic or travel lifestyle is going to change over the years because of some of the external forces that will make it change.
Yeah. So what are some of the shit you wish you knew going into your 30s? Maybe give us one or two advice from your book.
Yeah. So I think I tell myself to, like, stop bloody worrying. I think you need to be honest with yourself. I spent a lot of my 20s worrying about what other people thought, and I wish I didn't waste so much fucking time on that. I would say also, don't make big decisions in time of crises. So I think there's a habit when you're younger, and even still, that people will throw the baby out with the bathwater. They go through a breakup, they lose their job, and then they make some drastic decision at the time. I would say that from everything that I've seen and my own experiences, don't do that. Let yourself settle first. I think I would have told myself to save more money and get more structured when I'm younger. I didn't realize how important that was, which is fine. That I would say, like, also make sure, and I think I've done a really good job with this, but I've seen others that haven't. This idea, there's this whole, like, hashtag van life, hashtag digital nomad, go and be free, what have you. Like, that's fine for a while, but you do want a career. And the freedom that having financial security, and when I say financial security, the ability to show up in a country and be able to support yourself for a good income has given me so much mental stability and, like, choices to be able to do these adventures. I did not realize how important that was. And I'm so thankful to myself for finding a career that I was able to really enjoy and stick with for a long time and get quite successful at. So you want to be able to do something and get enough experience before it's too late. But at the same time, don't get on that treadmill. don't lock yourself in to a giant mortgage and car payments. Like, you have to be willing to work hard, but be step off the treadmill now and again, because I mean, the reality is most of us are going to be living until our 80s, 90s, 100, and the model of school, work, retirement no longer works. So you should be willing to, like, I've taken 4 sabbaticals already in my work life, and they haven't damaged my career of anything. They've accelerated it, because I've gone and worked on different skills that I couldn't get in the workplace, and that's seen as, I've worked for companies that have seen that as a massive valuable trait rather as something negative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. And by the sabbaticals, you mean like the trips you've taken, like between jobs and between moves?
Yeah, so I've never been fired from a job. I've never been made redundant. Like, I've actually had to say, like, peace out, I'm leaving. I'm taking a career break, or taking an extended period of unpaid leave, or resigned and changed jobs. And I've chosen to take myself out of a stable workplace, which is intimidating, and it takes you a while to get out of it, but absolutely no regrets in doing so.
Yeah, I guess it comes back to also like being okay with having to make some of the smaller sacrifices, like sometimes living very cheaply, or, you know, not maybe knowing if you're out and traveling, not knowing when your next income is going to, it's going to get in, but, it just comes with the lifestyle, I suppose. And over time, you know, you've been able to like kind of build a successful career so far. So I guess you have like trust in your abilities, and that everything will kind of work out, and that you'll find a job. And I guess if you really needed to, you could settle down as you did, like you're doing now, like in Switzerland for a while, and kind of work full time again.
Yeah. And it was the opportunity, right? Like, make no mistake, when I'm working, I work my ass off. Like, I am very ambitious. I want to be successful and have a successful career. And I have had an opportunity to come and work for a previous client of mine. And I'm working in like the digital transformation space in a massive company. And it is so interesting, and it's so cool. And I just, of course, I've moved to Switzerland. I mean, this is the upside about, again, not getting rooted down in stuff or in a place, is that somebody my age, a peer of mine from home who has 2 kids and a family, if they had this opportunity, they'd have so many more things to think about versus I just put my stuff in suitcases and moved. When it's time, again, this is the other thing, is I live quite simply. I don't have any aspiration for a big house or a flat or these sorts of things. So when I'm out here, I can save a huge amount of money. And I also can leave quite easily because I haven't accumulated a bunch of stuff. And that's kind of, again, some people might see that as a sacrifice. I just see that as like a lifestyle choice, more stuff, or like less stuff, less space, more life.
Yeah, for sure. Are there any other messages or words of wisdom you'd like to share here today?
I would just say, if you are traveling, write that shit down. Like, I'm at the point now that I've been to so many different places and done so many different things that it's actually, my earlier travels are starting to blend in a bit. And I really wish I had taken the time to write it down in a bit more detail and be able to reflect back on it. I mean, it's so easy. We're creating, I mean, when I started traveling, you did it by like the Lonely Planet guide. There was really not much internet. There was no mobiles. So, you know, I would just say to other people, to people traveling as well, do that a bit more. It's so easy to pick up your phone and figure out what's next and not talk to people. But actually, the whole point of traveling and the whole point of getting out there is to have human connection. Don't rely on the technology. The technology means it's easy. Yeah. But talking to people is where the real value comes.
Are there any other like books or resources that you found like helpful or useful or supportive maybe in through hard times, or books you read on the road?
So I think I wouldn't say necessarily books in hard times, but I think the books that have kind of changed my or solidified my thinking on this, I actually just sent it to your housemate. And there's a book called 100-Year Life, which talks about the kind of model of planning, how you should kind of plan your work life balance if you're going to live a lot longer. And they're massive advocates of taking these times out to work on yourself. And I'm a huge, that book changed my life. Another one is called The Year of Less, which is a Canadian financial blogger who she did a spending ban, and that's changed my mindset really much around. I don't really want to call it minimalism because I don't feel like I'm deprived at all in anything, and there's no, I'm not one of these people that count the number of objects I have, but it just really shifted my mindset around stuff and things and getting off the kind of consumerist treadmill and the opportunities that that has created to be able to do the things I want to do and to be able to say yes. Like, there is nothing, that's the thing about being, I think, a bit older and still doing this and making, you know, being in a job that I make reasonable money, is being able to go, and do you want to go skiing this weekend? Yes. And not have to worry about the finances to do it. And I think, again, it's just about trading stuff for the freedom to have choice to go on adventures.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, again, thank you so much. And I hope we can talk more about your adventures in future episodes.
No problem. Thanks, Adam.
Thanks. Bye.